This is another live radio link up brought to you by the Government Communications GCIS. GCIS. GCIS.
And we're back again on your radio. Good evening and Huyanan to the Western Cape tonight. And thank you so very much for joining us. My name is Mosotho Stone. And tonight we are on talking with the LGBTI community. This program is proudly brought to you by Government Communications and Information System, along with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We are joined by 10 community radio stations in the Western Cape, Huyenand, Immense Fan Divest Cup. And we are joined by 741 FM. We are joined by Atlantis. We're joined by Helderberg FM, Gamkaland, MFM, Eden FM down in George and Overberg, Worcester FM, Whale Coast down in Hermanus. And the West Coast FM, right down in the West Coast. And tonight, we will also be joined by Advocate Kwababana. And he's the legal admining officer for the DOJ and CD Western Cape Regional Office. We are also joined by Grayson Taylor. Grayson Taylor is also with the National Task Team as well as the Provincial Task Team of the Western Cape. And tonight we are talking the understanding of sexual orientation, gender identity, expression, and sex characteristics. In short, you know, we do quite a lot of acronym in South Africa. So it's called SOGSC. They will tell us more about that. The main point is to highlight departmental efforts by the Department of Justice and Constitution. These are the efforts in ensuring that the protection against violence and discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation, gender identity, expression, as well as sex characteristics. And we are also educating each other, you know, on the human rights generally, because, you know, we are different of color, we are different of creed, we are different of humanity, we are different of religion and all those kind of things. So today we are creating public awareness on the existence and the work of the LGBTQI plus the National Task Team and the Provincial Task Team. We're also educating about the intervention strategy that we will talk more about. Our guest tonight, as I did say, we are joined by the legal admin officer within the DOJ and CD, which is the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, who advocate Kwababana. And also, we will be joined by the provincial task team member, and they will tell us more about what this PTT is or what the entity is all about. Let me start with you, advocate. Good evening, Huyenand, Molo, Sawubona. Babu Kwabana, thank you so very much for joining us tonight. My name is Mosotho Stone, and welcome to the program.
And I'd like to also return by saying thank you.
Thank you
for having me. I'm very pleased to have me this evening. And actually, good evening to your listeners as well.
Thank you so very much. And Grayson Teller, thank you so very much. Good evening to you, Huyanand, Mwalo Sawbona, and all that stuff that says in all our South African languages.
Good evening to you, my good friend.
South Africa is a better country to live in. Don't you agree?
I would agree much better. Much better now. We've moved. We've progressed as a nation. And I'm quite happy as where we find ourselves.
Lovely, lovely. Let's start with you, Mr. Grayson. Let's talk about the national task team along with the provincial task team as a component and a project by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Tell us a little bit about that in line with addressing the elephant in the room tonight, which is the discussion around the existence of humans that we classify as LGBTIQ+. And for me, it's a topic that has been over-exhausted. But however, for those who just are trying to conscientize themselves around it, what can we say to them?
Indeed. I think it's quite critical that you note that the entity was established in 2011 by the then Minister of Justice.
Mm.
And the reason being is that he was petitioned by Luleki Sizwe because of a particular hate crime that had occurred on someone who identified as LGBTI. And of course, after this petition, he was mandated to establish the entity. And of course, the entity has its objectives, isn't it? And its objectives, in a nutshell, of course, with contributions from civil society and contributions from government, and of course, Chapter 9 institutions basically then speaks to the violence and the discrimination and the hate crimes that are perpetrated against individuals with a difference in sexual orientation, with a difference in gender identity, with a difference in gender expression, and of course with a difference in sexual characteristics. So in a nutshell, that is what the entity does. And of course, the entity has multiple facets, as it's got its presence in all the 9 provinces.
Mm.
And thus, of course, these provinces then implement the objectives and strategies of the National Task Team, which is chaired by the Deputy Minister of Justice, as well as a civil society member.
Thank you so very much, Grayson Teller. Grayson Teller is with the Provincial Task Team. My tongue is playing games with me, but otherwise it's all good. Provincial Task Team, National Task Team, and my producers kept on nodding their heads. I'm not going alone tonight, and thank you so very much to K-Flame Ranoto as well as Unam Hlongo. They are making sure that this program comes to you live, and you are welcome to join us on 0800-142-446. You have a daughter, you have a son. And, you know, we're not talking at these things at a political level where you're thinking this is jargon. You know, this is like paying school fees. You know, sometimes, you know, when these people talk English, they make us feel like we paid less school fees than they did. But otherwise, today we are trying to unravel that and make sure that, you know, the English becomes better for communication more than extrapolating things. All right, I just did say extrapolate, so I'm eating my own school fees myself. All right, Advocate, welcome, and let's talk the intervention that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development is actually in support of the national as well as the provincial task teams regarding understanding sexual orientation, gender identity expression, as well as sex characteristics. From the departmental point of view, what is in place? And somebody out there in the Western Cape, somewhere in Paarl, you know, somewhere in Khayelitsha, is listening to you, trying to bring them a bit closer to belonging to the definitions of the legal processes that support them regarding the LGBTI. Welcome, Advocate, and please just give me your kind of abstract to this matter.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Msutu. Mine is to actually start from the background of understanding that I'm sorry that I could not hear Grayson properly.
Okay.
But I understood from his discussion, that presentation, that the entity, which is the national task team, as well as the provincial task team, is actually a joint venture between government as well as civil society. Now, it goes back to that issue, that statement that is normally said by government officials, that it cannot be done only by government. It needs to have a societal outlook also or input, and that's exactly what this entity and the PTT is all about. So what it does is the interventions that are actually are being done on the ground, they are given effect by the civil society, because you understand that most of us as government officials, we are actually more administrative in offices. But the civil society is more on the ground. They are the ones that are actually are feeling the pressure. They are the ones that are being hated against. You see, so they feel a need to actually provide some sort of assistance to the victim of hate crimes, of hate speech, of all these ills, social ills. So now the interventions that were done by the department, by the Department of Justice, was to ensure that we actually promote and then we protect the LGBTI community by educating the society, by having events, by going out to the people and teach them about what does it mean to be an LGBTQI+ person, and what sort of rights do you have. Now we understood that it cannot be a once-off a measure. It needs to be continuous. So interventions such as the one that we're doing this evening, it needs to be amplified. It needs to be more. We need to be speaking about this topic on and on so that people can actually get to understand it. I like the fact that you did speak about the fact that, you know, there are children at schools. You spoke about you actually eating your school fee.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine a situation where a child cannot actually go to school only because he's being discriminated against based on his or her gender? So those are all social orientation, so to say. So those are issues that the Department of Justice decided to do alongside with the civil society. And Grayson would inform you that they've done a great deal of work. I know they know there is a lot that they're still going to be doing in his civil society. They've done a lot of work within the schools, within the universities, because part of the implementation strategies by the department is to actually change, influence the curriculum, to actually speak about issues of LGBTI, including interfaith.
Thank you so very much, Advocate, on that allusion. And you're welcome to join us on 0800-142-446. 0800-142-446. And Afrikaans, that says that 0800-142-446. 0800-142-446. Whether you speak Afrikaans, whether you speak isiXhosa, whether you speak Sesotho, whether you speak any South African language, you are welcome to call, and we are able to, unravel this whole uncomfortable topics that we normally would talk about. For me, generally, it shouldn't be anything that we should be uncomfortable about, but let's stop being emotional. Let's just look at the legal part of it. And do you have a kid? Do you have your uncle? Do you? In Western Cape, for instance, you know, we have less cultural, socio kind of life, but we do have more of a religious, the Muslim, the Hindu, and Christian kind of communities, which sometimes Advocate and Mr. Grayson, they might just affect the legal processes in terms of making sure that the protection for the community, the LGBTI community, is actually, you know, infringed somewhere, somehow. But now the policing part of it will be like the national task team that we need to get to know much about. And Grayson, I would really put this on you to say, In the Western Cape in particular, we know the national task team is responsible for quite a number of things at the national level. But let's talk about the Western Cape. What are you bringing onto the table to make sure that, you know, the community of the Western Cape is actually feeling aligned to what your efforts are?
Absolutely, you know, and as my learned colleague has alluded earlier on, is that it's very important that when we are dealing with issues of human beings, with the issues that are on the ground, it's very important to have a multi-sectorial approach to it, and bring voices to the fore. Because as you well know, that the situational analysis on the ground consistently changes. And the provincial task team really, together with civil society, of course, speaks to addressing hate crime, speaks to addressing hate speech, speaks to addressing discrimination and violence wholeheartedly. And when we talk about violence specifically, we're not necessarily talking about physical violence, but also speaking to structural violence. Because as we very well know, that when we talk about a difference in gender identity, we're talking about trans and gender diverse persons with a difference in sexual characteristics as well, intersex bodies. And the system is not necessarily built for us. It was never built for us. If you reflect on the South African history, you reflect on the Immorality Act, which literally criminalized LGBTI bodies from being free. And of course, those legacies of the past are still present today. And of course, unhelpful religious beliefs as well, and cultural beliefs, of course, also speak to the lived experience and create the vulnerability that exists. So it's important to have a multi-sectoral approach. In as much as we're dealing with the system and policing, we also need to deal with the educational perspective as well. That it must be a concurrent kind of intervention that deals with both sides of the coin. So it's important.
Your call has been placed on hold. Wait.
All right. Grayson, are you still with us?
Your call has been placed.
All right. Who's with us? It's Advocate. Okay. I think Kay Flame and Ona will deal with that at the moment. You're still tuned to a special broadcast, which is brought to you by Government Communication and Information System, along with the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. We are talking to Advocate Kwababana. He's Advocate Lwandiso Kwababana. He's responsible for legal admin in the Office of the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, based at the Western Cape Regional Office. And as well as Ugrayson Taylor. Ugrayson is part of the National Task Team, but he is also part of the provincial. There's this thing about provincial today, and just forgive that thing. It's with my tongue. Provincial Task Team. Or should I say Western Cape Task Team? I think I'm going to go with that. And otherwise, I'm inviting you to be part of this conversation on 0800-142-446. I know sometimes you might be doubting. Doubting because probably you might want to comment, but your religious status does not allow you to comment. And there, boom, you have it. Your child becomes one of the LGBTI community, because you know these things, they do not invite themselves into our lives. It is the work of God. It is the work of the higher power. It is the work of the bigger spirituality. I'm not sure how to actually express it to you. I believe Grayston is back online, and Grayston, as we were talking about the role, the task of the national and the provincial task team, particularly looking at the issues of the Western Cape. Let's look at it once more, and sorry for being cut off, because sometimes technology can just fail us.
No, absolutely, my brother, no worries at all.
Yeah.
So as I alluded earlier on, is that we need a multi-sectorial approach to addressing these kind of challenges that is informed by the...
If you can just come a bit close to your phone, Grayston, so that we are the listeners and me can able to hear your allusions as clearly.
All right.
There you go.
There we go. So, of course, then you need intervention in society. So government works hand in hand, the National Task Team and the PTT works hand in hand with civil society, because civil society is at the heart of these issues, addresses these issues on a day-to-day basis in society. So we work hand in hand with one another and capacitate one another. And therefore, our interventions then directly speak to society, where we are consistently sensitizing, teaching, informing people about the lived experiences and the laws that are there to protect LGBTI persons as well, and to affirm LGBTI individuals. I think it's very also important to note that there are laws in this country that protects people. And if people should know that there are measures available for them to address issues that are currently happening on the ground. I mean, if you note, last year alone, we had numbers of biblical proportions of hate crimes that have occurred. Many, many people died. Many, many people were raped. Many, many people faced violence just last year alone. So we need to make sure that these challenges are addressed, and we need to make sure that we prevent them from happening. And the prevention perspective also comes from learning and unlearning, also comes from education. And that is where civil society on the ground and the PTT then speaks to at that particular instance.
All right. That's the voice of Grayston. Grayston Teller is with the National Task Team and a member of the Provincial Task Team of the Western Cape when it comes to LGBTI Q plus community, in terms of support, in terms of intervention, in terms of leading the way, especially at the legal level, because at the social level it's up to all of us. And that's where I invite you to call in on 0800-142-446. Even if you have doubts, you know, yesterday we had another program where somebody who happens to be from the Christian community was actually quoting verses that actually would say God created man and woman. And that is at an eye level. I mean, I'm looking at Ona, I'm looking at Okomuto, I'm looking at myself, and I'm like, sure, brah. You know, and that in itself, when somebody says sure, brah, to you, Grayston, to you, advocate, because I mean, advocate is a legal title, kind of, but brah is a title on the street where somebody might not know that advocate is an advocate, basically. And by just let's say you become and you choose to be whoever you want to be. And religiously so or traditionally so, somebody does not see advocate kwababana. Somebody sees bra. You know, I'm saying it with this attitude because that's how in the Western Cape, as you know, advocate bra. You know, that's the social status of who we are, in terms, irrespective of all these kind of legalities, the paperwork and everything that we got. Now, you are the lawmakers in terms of being vested with the power of custodianship by the Department of Justice and Constitutional. Now, how do we make sure that, you know, there's no violence, there's no gender violence, there's no violence of some kind against, and there's also toleration? How do you work with the police? Where the police, basically, some of my callers are going to call now and say, I went to the police station, Babu Kwaba. They said, I went to the police station, and the police looked at me like, but you are such a big man. Why didn't you fight for yourself? You know, we are dealing with those kind of things where you cannot just wave a legal kind of phrase to somebody who did it. How do we make sure that, you know, there's synergy in these kind of happenings, as well as socially and politically, as well as legally? Where do we get the synergy together?
Okay, Mr. Nsutu, if I may.
Yes, please.
From the inception, and from the onset, SAPS, which is South African Police Services, they're actually part of our entity.
Mm.
So you'll see that there are departmental institutions that are actually encrypted within this national task team, and they are composed of National Prosecuting Authority, Legal Aid South Africa, Department of Social Development, including some health as well, basic education, correctional services. So this is actually an intersectoral approach.
Yes.
We cannot actually accept a situation where there is a staff official who's not sensitized on the issue of LGBTI.
I like that.
In fact, on our meetings, we ensure and we actually request reports from all these departments that I just mentioned to say what sort of training needs do they have so that we can support them. And Grayson, they would also attest to this because in other instances, they actually go to SAFs and actually train. Yes, we have discovered that there are training needs within the SAF services. In fact, in other service points, and the department itself has created a document to actually train the service providers to deal with issues of LGBTI when it comes to the service point.
Mm.
Yes, it is a problem. And you understand again that it cannot be one-time training. It needs to be continuous, and that's
yes.
what is happening. But again, it's a social thing. It needs a change of attitudes. We might actually be speaking about LGBTI today, but you understand that it goes beyond that. It goes to having an official of the department to actually, especially those who took oath, like officials of the police service, to say they will protect all the South African citizens. Now, this protection is a constitutional imperative. It's not about what you feel. It's not about what your religion requires you to believe in. Yes, we respect your religion, but we also respect the fact that you are actually employed by the South African government. And if you're going to be a staff official, you need to provide safety to all South African citizens, not only to those that you recognize as men or whatever it is that you
from a face value kind of thing. That's what I'm saying.
Exactly. Mm. So people must just take all. Act according to their oath. But I'm not pointing out when I'm saying stuff. I'm just making examples.
Yes.
Because as the department, we take responsibility. Anything that is done by any member of the department or of government, it's a collective It's a collective win. It's also a collective loss. So hence we, from time to time, we actually have our meetings where we monitor all these issues. And it's a GBV issue. That's what it is. So it is actually inclusive. We cannot do it on our own as the Department of Justice, but we need to lead other departmental departments to actually take us through. But luckily for us, we have a very good relationship with civil society. We're getting a lot of input from the experts because they actually do researches. They go on the ground. They tell us the stories about how the services is not actually being given or not being given properly to the victims of hate crimes. And we actually monitor those sort of cases. And I think that's another point that I wanted to actually highlight, that one of the highlights or maybe one of the important measures that were put in place by the NTT is that there is a rapid response task team which actually zoom in to all the nitty-gritties that will ensure that a matter is ready for prosecution, and when it is prosecuted, it is not going to delay, that it will be prioritized in court. Whenever there's an issue of LGBTI hate crime, then we actually have a committee that sits to it and see to it that these matters are prioritized. So any kind of a glitch is actually, we try the owners to work it out very quickly on the system.
You are tuned to a talk show on sexual orientation, gender identity, expression, as well as sex characteristics. It's SOGI SC. It's matters that we are discussing tonight. And we are joined by 10 radio stations in Western Cape, which I believe right now, this radio station should be having listeners. At least 10 of the people should be able to comment, not from the academical point of view, but from a real experience point of view. And I'm highlighting all these radio stations as 7441 FM, as Atlantis, as Helderberg, as Gamkaland MFM, Eden FM, Overberg, Worcester, Well Coast, as well as West Coast. Yes, And we are talking about a province. I once used to stay in Cape Town, and I know there's less traditional kind of approach, but there is more the LGBTQI community in the Western Cape, as far as I know. I'm not sure. I stand to be corrected, Advocate and Grayson. But staying in the Western Cape conscientized me quite a lot about the LGBTQI community. However, the social status on the ground says you are aware about gangsterism that happens in the Western Cape. How do you associate the gender violence that goes against LGBTQI? I'm talking to you, Grayston, in terms of this as somebody who works within the provincial task team, and probably you might have had cases. And, you know, speak to the provincial community, the Western Cape community around, particularly in your Cape Town, in your George areas, in your, you know, Hermanus areas, you know, Danoon, you know, all those kind of people, all those kind of places where they have a bit of impoverished kind of communities, yet they do have a problem of drugs, a problem of prostitution, a problem of gangsterism. And these are some of the things that the task team has to deal with to make sure that, you know, we go somewhere in terms of getting rid of this. Grayson?
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, I would separate the issues.
Yes.
You know, of gangsterism, it's an issue, it's a standalone issue on its own. You know, the issues of sex workers being attacked because of their identity, because you do have sex workers who identify as LGBTI, identify as trans. And the discrimination, the hate crime that you find, particularly in this instance when you're talking about the sex work industry, is that you find that there are clients who become violent. There are clients, of course, who attack sex workers.
Who but some of them are our listeners as we speak. You know, we must speak to them as if like they're listening to us right now, Grayson.
Absolutely. But I think what is the problematic factor in the response to this particular crime and violence is how, you know, certain police officers or law enforcement officers respond to the matter based on the person's identity, where there's a blatant disregard to attend to a case based on someone's identity or sexual orientation. And this is where really the penny should drop, where we need to realize that, as my colleague said, that it's a multifactorial approach. So police is very, very important in making sure that there's a prevention of crime and also the education as well. So, of course, this, as these kind of crimes get then documented, and this is when the rapid response team executes its particular mandate in this regard. But you do find that these crimes, they bring themselves to the surface. You know, violence can happen at any point in time, at any province, at any given time.
Yes.
But the problem then becomes when the violence is fueled by homophobia and transphobia, and a blatant disregard for the ever-so-present diversity that has consistently existed in society. There are different people. There are people who are different in many, many ways. But you don't see other people going around, you know, beating on people because they identify as different. So there is a particular attack against LGBTI persons and who they affirm themselves as. But luckily in South Africa, you know, one of the first countries really, the first country to really develop constitution obligation to affirm people with a difference in identity. You've got the Bill of Rights, you know, Chapter 2. You've got PROPUDA. You've got Act 49, which is the Alteration of Sex Description and Sex Status Act. Mm-hmm. And this particular act allows and empowers trans and gender adverse persons to alter their sex description to affirm their true identity and to alter their names. As you may very well in society, you know, when you are born, you know, and the doctor looks in between your legs, your name quite often is assigned to you based on your sex, assigned at birth, isn't it? So you might find that your name given does not represent your gender identity. That, for instance, your name is Thabo, but you don't identify as a Thabo. Now, this particular act empowers you to change your name and to affirm your identity so that your legal documentation then represents your true gender, whether it's male or female. And I'm very happy to say and proud to say that in collaboration with the Department of Health, as we alluded earlier on, that we have quite a number of people and representatives trying to tackle these issues in a multi-sectoral manner. Home Affairs will then be introducing a third gender marker. So it's no longer going to be male or female, but however, there's going to be a third gender marker that affirms people with a difference in sex assigned at birth and with a difference in their identity that was assigned, typically assigned at birth. So you might identify as who you are. And these three options really speak to the true definition of what equity is. And equity is redress. Equity is addressing the gap that has been left. And this is what we're talking about, creating options for people to affirm and self-identify. And that is critical.
All right. That's the voice of Grayson Teller. He's with the provincial task team that has been put together for the sake of supporting the LGBTQI community. I'm trying to generalize on this, and I'm trying to get as much information as possible from Grayson as well as Advocate Lwandiso Kwababana. And Advocate, let's talk. You know, Grayson just alluded to something that speaks about government and departmental procedures and all that stuff, which is filling of forms. You know, the filling of forms is something that has to be addressed by the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, where legal forms still don't have legally a gender a classification of some kind. I'm not sure how to put it in English, but it's just a language for me. But somewhere deep inside me says, I'm Mosotho Stone. I am with two producers who happen to be, immediately when I ask them, they're going to say male in any form. You know, if they have to apply for a police job, they will be like gender. They go like male. And I would also ask you to say, when you apply for any job, which is legally your right, you are well-versed, you are well academically accomplished and all that stuff, but here comes this form, a Z83, and it goes to a certain department and it does not specify where the LGBTQI community needs to fill in. And I feel like this is a responsibility of the department, and through you, I'm going to say from the Western Cape, it has been quite very prevalent that we do have people who need to be ticking something other than just male and female. How do we go about this in 2022 when a form still has African, Black, Indian and all those? It has male and female and then there's other. How do we address this? Because this is infringement of people's human rights. Advocate, this is to you.
True, Mr. Nsuthu, you are quite correct. And this has been a cry from the civil society, as Grayson would have indicated. It has been a cry, and within the national task team, there has been a lot of discussion. And better for us, we do have in attendance from time to time the Department of Home Affairs. I mean, this is not just an easy issue, because it goes back to our law as to what is actually required and what is actually permissible in terms of the forms and how they're supposed to have been constructed. But we are actually in a good space with the civil society to influence the change that we want to see. And the change currently, you understand in the past that there has been a lot of talks about including others on the issue of the race. Now, the second move is to say, let's indicate other when it comes to the issue of gender identification of gender, then that other will be able to actually cover what is actually required. But you understand that it depends. Yeah, again, circumstances are different. But I would actually address the issue of saying, if a form requires a gender for the purpose of accommodation, then it needs to actually give us enough information so that the person who's going to be deciding on where this person will be accommodated in or to, you know, will be able to actually make an informed decision in terms of the gender. So that's what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to say it depends as to what is the purpose of such identification of the gender. When it comes to the court, when it comes to the courts, you will see that I would actually advise that there should be a specification to say other shows so that you can actually include the LGBTI. For me, I would even say, and I know right now that I'm not really much coordinated as to how to put through this point that I'm trying to bring across.
Yes.
But I would actually have a situation where in each form, we don't actually arrest our gender identification on email or mail, but to also include the LGBTI acronym so that whoever that actually falls into it can actually feel that they are identified properly.
That is the voice of Advocate Kwababana, and this is the role that the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development is playing in terms of how he articulates. Particularly, we are addressing the communities of the Western Cape tonight. We did address the Eastern Cape communities yesterday. And the other day, we addressed the KwaZulu-Natal. And these are different provinces with different dynamics. And tonight, we are talking more on the LGBTQI community having its space, its rightful space within the South African community. And to me, we are over the fact that, you know, we do not know about the LGBTI communities. And I'm not going to listen to anybody who's going to rock up from some rock, underneath some rock, trying to say, I haven't known about this. We know about this. It's either you are for or against. And let's talk about your own issues. If you are against, talk to us. I mean, nobody's going to just say, put you down simply because you hold certain beliefs. And however, if you feel like you are on a higher horse than everybody else, I mean, talk to us about your horse. Why is it so grown? Why is the LGBTQI community has to be compared to having a pony while you are having a well kind of... I'm making these social kind of examples because, Grayson, we still have our schools that me and you probably come from. The reason why we are talking together today is because we are well-versed in one way or the other of being ourselves, you know? But how do we get the community to allow an LGBTQI community member to be a teacher to their kids in school? Because at the end of the day, they'll be saying, he's a mess teacher. But now, here comes Minir Gukemur, and he feels like, Nieman, mekent khani education get from somebody who's gay or lesbian or whatever. He forgot that maybe, probably, that is an award-winning teacher of some kind. How do we enforce understanding, particularly when it comes to schools? I talked about the law. I spoke to advocate about the policing part of it and all the. But in terms of schools, because, I mean, the LGBTQI community goes to school with all of us. And when I say all of us, I don't want to say we normal. They also normal. And all of us, we normal. So how do normal people make sure that normality is normal from school, from the school part of it? Especially that, you know, teachers are the first cradle of how we should see the world. Grayson, I would really like you to get into this one.
Yeah, you know, I think first and foremost, teaching and learning should start in the home. I mean, no one is born racist, right?
Yes.
Racism, it's taught, you know, and of course enforced structurally, but it's taught. Homophobia and transphobia is taught. So the learning and unlearning, first and foremost, is to start at home. And of course, this has to be integrated in the learning, the teaching and learning development in schools as well. Of course, this speaks to the curriculum that is currently at school. It's very important that we teach the youth and the future generation of this country that there's a wide array of diversity. I think that is very important. Mm. And of course, when it comes to the matter of not wanting, and of course, you cannot leave the school SGBs out of this conversation. It's critical that they form a part of this conversation in terms of understanding also that the manner in which The discrimination is unpacked in this manner. It's against the constitution of the country. It's against the law. So I think that is also very important to note that these things are against the law. And of course, that would be a legal matter if someone had to get dismissed by purely identifying as a particular identity. No one gets dismissed, you know, for their identity. You know, it's wrong. And I think also there are people, of course, these notions that people have or the embedded transphobia is also fueled by, unuseful biblical beliefs. And I think what is very unbiblical is people using certain texts in the Bible to their advantage. Because when we reflect on the Bible and we reflect on the current context, you know, there are things that are different that don't necessarily exist. For example, I mean, the Bible says that it's a sin to mix your clothing.
Yes.
I assure you, Norm Suti, you have committed a crime because you're probably wearing mixed clothing.
Most definitely.
I myself have committed a sin because I'm wearing mixed clothing, and this is biblical. The Bible also says that it is a sin not to have skirting in your house.
Mm.
And so if you see that people use different biblical contexts to their own advantage, and I think that is the unbiblical thing. And we need to realize that as a nation, as a people, with certain beliefs, we have double standards in the application. And in that realization, that is where one needs to check themselves.
Mm.
And in realizing the double standards apply in our day-to-day lives.
Yes. And I asked that question because there is a question and a comment from Kevin, who is based in Somerset West. Advocate Kwababana, listen to this very carefully because it is government orientated, this one. It says, Kevin might be listening to Helderberg FM because I believe Helderberg is in Somerset West. Thank you so very much. And he says, will government at some point really look into saying government or the Department of Basic Education, that's how he puts it, will they educate kids, family, and parents of the LGBTQI community via workshops, seminars, as well as maybe a subject, you know, life orientation. That's life orientation, really, because sometimes they say freedom of expression is limited to a certain point, you know, and he also says that in itself, there's a stigma that if you date someone in the LGBTQI community, you will catch various sort of sicknesses, illnesses, and mainly so, you know, people are worried about HIV and AIDS and all that. Unfortunately, he does not want to be on air because, you know, we are dealing with those tensions where people are afraid to express themselves to be heard because the community might basically just go and assassinate him tonight and all that stuff. But he's basically saying, how do you work with the Department of Education in ensuring that, you know, government speaks in one language, advocate? Government speaks in one language where, you know, our education system, I know you might not speak much towards the education system, but what are you contributing as the Department of Justice towards making sure that education is the key to success, and that success includes the LGBTQI community?
True that, Mr. Mitsuda. I must actually say thank you to the listener who's asking these questions and pointing them straight to the department. And you know, it's so strange. I'm sorry that I might be misquoted, but I laugh at certain individuals who are still stuck in the past.
Yes.
You know, who are still stuck in the past. We don't understand that by now we're supposed to have moved from stereotypes. And I understand that we are charged as the department, of course, with the civil society to educate people continuously so that people can understand that it's no longer an issue that a person will actually contract HIV just by looking at people.
That's the most primitive thing that have ever existed in 2022, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, this will you touch into COVID also to this, because the same stigma that has been attached, what we've been battling with as the department or maybe as government in the past when it comes to HIV, actually it found its way to actually make the fight against, I mean, for us when we're fighting against this COVID-19, it's always that issue of stigma that is making people to actually, you know, to take their minds very much far back where they can't actually fight whichever disease that is actually in front of us. So being gay is not a disease. You can never contract any sickness just because you are gay or you actually subscribe to LGBTI community. But that's not the issue. The issue here is that one needs to educate. They need to open their mind. It's a paradigm shift that is requested, and understand that people evolve. All of us, we evolve. The society evolves. And you spoke about how do we as the department try to actually educate the parents of the LGBTI organization, person. We try to only to link up with the civil society. As I said initially, that we cannot do most of these things as government, but the civil society is actually closer to the community. And I know that there are civil society organizations that are very much welcoming to have even walk in where they can actually speak about these issues. In Cape Town, I can attest that we planned to actually have a outreach where we were going to be inviting in Khayelitsha, led by Funeka Soldat Pregender, where we were going to be inviting the parents of the LGBTI community for the sole purpose of actually advising them as to what is LGBTI and that it is actually not a case to have a child who is LGBTI. It is, they need to understand that LGBTI is actually a human just like myself, just like yourself. There is nothing demeaning other than the fact that LGBTI is actually feeling the way the person is feeling. If today I should not be judged, if tomorrow I suddenly have a likes of being attracted to a man, you know, I should not be vilified for such. And it's not a sickness. There's nothing wrong. You don't need to take your child to a doctor to examine and actually see, you know, whether what is wrong. There's nothing wrong at all. There's nothing wrong. And the educational aspect of this is very crucial, because you go to school. At school, and you know that when a child is young, at school level, that's the best place to actually teach children good and bad as well. And the teachers, they play a very crucial role. Now let's take it away from the education system. You know, another education system that plays a role in the child, in the development of the child, is actually sports. You go to a rugby club, you find out the guys they actually deal with issues of this nature differently than in soccer.
Yes.
So it's the best place also to actually introduce new methods of teaching people as to what is LGBTI. I'm sure that the more we sensitize people, then we can actually deal with these stereotypes very easy. Yeah, it will be easy, but we should not actually close opportunities and platforms. We should actually go to each and every open platform. I mean, you spoke about churches. There are still churches that will be quoting Bible to suit their narrative. And the same Bible will also say that we are all made in God's image. But to fit their narrative, they'll actually twist it. But again, the issue of education will be more important, because today I would not be an advocate of human rights and also advancing the rights of the LGBT and promoting such if I did not have education that is actually well-rounded and that is not biased to one narrative. So, yeah, so the listener is asking a very good question. And one of these initiatives that the government has is to go out to the people to do outreach events, to do awareness raising. But I think then to address that issue of parents, we need to have more of such and be focused and focus on them to say that we'll identify and we're going to be targeting parents. So, yeah, so that's where we are, and it is doable.
All right. This is a special broadcast. We almost left with 5 minutes. And I just want to highlight one of the statements that was made. It was a joint statement that was made on the 21st of April, 2021 by 24 different organizations, including government, as well as the Hendrik Bols Stiftung, and many of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance of South Africa, Gay and Lesbian Network, Gender Dynamics, Global Interfaith Network for People of All Sexes. And mind you, I like this part where an organization will be called Global Interfaith Network of People of All Sexes, Sexual Orientations, Gender Identities and Expression. This is so much of an inclusive name. And but anyway, without let me just say, they just said, on the statement when it came out on the 22nd of April 2021, they say over the past 2 months, which is like probably around February or so of last year, the LGBTQI community has been rocked by a series of brutal hate crimes against its members, mainly so from KwaZulu-Natal, from Gauteng, from Eastern Cape, and as well as the Western Cape, where at least 6 lives were just snuffed out cold-bloodedly, you know, because somebody who happens to think differently from the other person, you know, there is this round gentleman that goes like, if you're not educated, you might just be a little bit barbaric, which I don't believe in, because I'm a kind of a, I do have a rural background, and I'm 100% rural background. But otherwise, here am I able to talk, to speak to you today, simply because I could mention a name, many names who, I mean, for example, Bonang from Sebokeng on the 12th of February, last year. On the 5th of March, there was Nonhlanhla Kunene, and there was Phamandla Khoza, there was, you know, Andile Ululu Ntutela, who's 41 years old from Gariga in KwaNobuhle. You know, there's Lonwabo Jack in particular, and I'm sure, gentlemen, you know about this one. Lonwabo Jack, a young LGBTQI individual who had just celebrated his 22nd birthday on the 17th of April last year. And his lifeless body was found on a pavement next to Enyanga in Cape Town, where, you know, he was brutally murdered simply because somebody believes that they need to cleanse this God's world of the LGBTQI community. Now, these people are being killed, and we do have a judicial system. We do have a parliamentary system, a legislative system. We have like your governance system, which is government. Now, today, it was one of those. I'm wrapping off with a question to both of you. Today, it was the second interview of the Chief of Justice, the Chief Justice in South Africa. And in my observation, the LGBTQI community is being addressed as if like there was a question that says, do you think South Africa is ready for a woman chief justice? But now I'm going to put this to both of you. In your own opinion and in where you are being vested with powers and the understanding, do you think South Africa is ready for any kind of gender kind of chief justice?
I think you know, if we had a lesbian chief justice, a transgender chief justice, then I'd say that we're truly progressive. But it's true. I think we've reached a stage in our lives where, you know, male privilege needs to step aside. We need to recognize male privilege. We need to recognize that, you know, male privilege existed and has sidelined many people many years. Patriarchy has sidelined many people for many years. So I think it's very critical that when we speak about true transformation, we actually exercise it and it becomes tangible. So I think we need to start moving to the direction where a difference in identity and representation is there. You know, so let us have a woman who is a transgender woman who's a chief justice. You know, but your identity has no bearing on your experience, your qualification, you know, and accolades. You understand? So it's very critical for us to make sure that there is significant representation, because when we do have representation, automatically what someone in your holding or in your company or in a department that knows how to do things, that speak to people out there. So it's very important for us to have representation. So I think as men, we need to truly recognize that it's time for us to step aside and give those that have been marginalized for many, many years to come to the fore. We must recognize it's time that we step aside and we must come to the fore.
Same question to you, Advocate, in closing.
Yes, in closing, Mr. Nsutu, I mean, I had that question when the JC was actually interviewed.
They're quite very adamant on that one, eh?
Yeah, but if you recall, I would like to also incline to the, almost to the answer that was given by Ms. Maya, that it is actually irritating at this point in time to be asked a question of readiness, whereas we know that we are South Africa and there was an instance where they were what we were working on Uncharted Territory, where for the first time we had the first black president.
Yes.
And at that time, there were no such questions as to the readiness of a black man to be the president, for example. So also to this fact, I would say that South Africa is actually ready for having any sort of judge president. It could be a female, a male. It could be someone that is conforming to the LGBTI. It could be someone that is not conforming to anything. You know, South Africa is ready for such. Why I'm saying this, from the legal point of view, you see that we have what we call Lady Justice, who is actually blindfolded.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. The emblem. Is it an emblem?
Yes.
Yes.
Justice, yes. So when you look at that emblem and understanding the ethos, the background of what it means for me clear that Lady Justice or whoever that should be the head of the judiciary should not be classy or should not actually be determined based on their sex, their sexual orientation or their gender.
Very profound.
The only requirement that I would have, I'm not actually going to be going to other requirements such as whether they are competent or whatsoever. I'm not even looking at that. I'm looking at one requirement, which is that must be a human being.
Yes.
So that would be my requirement. Any human being in South Africa that actually possesses all the qualities of being a leader in that kind of a field will actually take it from me.
All right. Advocate Lwandiso Gwababana, thank you so very much. Grayson Teller, thank you so very much. And thank you so very much to those who have been listening, even though it is quite a very complex topic in terms of expression. And I will actually just give a bit of understanding to people who are not able to express themselves but are listening to us. Thank you, Kevin, for breaking up that ice from the listener's point of view. And gentlemen, thank you so very much. May the LGBTQI community be recognized as much as me and you. And one day, I hope we do not bring gender matters into expertise matters. And that is the future of South Africa I wish for. Thank you so very much and God bless.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
All right. And that's what brings us to the end of our program tonight. Thank you so very much to the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development. Thank you so very much to Government Communication and Information System. And thank to the producers tonight, Komutso K. Flame, Ranoto, as well as Unali Namhlongo. My name is Mosotho Stone, and Goeienaand.